Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A new Secretary of Education with a union resume. Labor, excited, conservatives, well, you know that story. And today on the show, the Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO and the last show with one of America's top labor leaders. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, December 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts. When you get an opportunity, don't forget to do this. Just sign up, get our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. Bill Samuel is going to be our first guest on the show. He's one of our regulars, longtime contributor to America's Workforce, and he's going to delve into the Washington politics of trying to get a stimulus package for millions of Americans who are hurting. And I mean hurting. We're talking 20 million people unemployed in America. Now, last couple of days, you've probably been following the news. You had the House, then you had the Senate vote on a stimulus bill. Nothing close to what happened back in March, maybe about a third of funding compared to what came out in March, somewhere right around that. Well, at the last minute, Donald Trump, who was not involved in the negotiation, says, you know what, the $600 payments to Americans is not enough. It should be $2,000. And as a result of that, everything is on hold. The Democrats are kind of excited. The Republicans are scratching their head. They just don't know what to do. In the meantime, Trump has vetoed the defense appropriations bill, which is going to affect a lot of military paychecks. And he's left town. He's in Florida at Mar-a-Lago. So Bill is going to take a look at what's on the table, what could be on the table. Some good news here. The airlines are getting money for their employees. That's part of the payroll protection program. We'll talk about that as well. And then we're going to get into the Biden cabinet and, well, exciting news about the new Secretary of Education. I'll get to that in a moment. But he's going to run down the picks so far. And to date, we do not have a pick for the Labor Department. I got to check with Bill on that to see where that stands, because some good names have popped up. And that's pretty much going to be the last pick, or close to the last pick. So Bill Samuel will be our first guest. And one thing he is going to reflect on is Larry Willis, what we're going to do to button up the show today. And I've been wanting to do this for the last couple of weeks. You heard me talk about the passing of Larry Willis. This was at the end of November, right around Thanksgiving. He was riding his bicycle, something that he just loved to do around Washington, D.C., and he was sideswiped by a car, and he died several days later. Larry was the president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, which is a collection of 30-plus unions dealing with trucking, rail, air, you name it. He was an advocate for so many workers, and he was so articulate on the issues that concerned those in transportation. So what we're going to do, the last show we had with him was October 26th, and we're going to replay that show today. And I urge you to listen carefully to it, because at the end of the show, Larry and I were talking about the upcoming election. Keep in mind, this was like a week before the general election. And you could tell how optimistic he was. I mean, he was concerned. He didn't know if Biden or Trump was going to win the election. But he was, like he always is, very, very optimistic, looking forward to it. He was looking forward to our next conversation to talk about that. So that will be what we're going to button up the show today with, Larry Willis's last show right here on America's Workforce. All right. Education Secretary. Goodbye, Betsy DeVos. President-elect Joe Biden introduced Miguel Cardona as his pick for Education Secretary yesterday, saying Connecticut's education chief and lifelong champion of public schools is the right pick to lead the department as the nation struggles to educate students safely during the pandemic. The selection delivers on Biden's promise to nominate someone with experience working in public education and would fulfill his goal of installing an education chief who stands in sharp contrast to Betsy DeVos, the current education secretary. Unlike DeVos, a school choice advocate whom Biden says is an opponent of public schools, Cardona is a product of them, starting when he entered kindergarten, not even able to speak English. During remarks in Wilmington, Delaware, Biden called Cardona a brilliant educator who would help further his administration's commitment to reopening schools and doing so safely. This is a quote from the president-elect. We can do it if we give school districts, communities, and states the clear guidance and resources that are not already in their tight budgets. He went on to say, addressing the issue requires someone who understands the need to prevent the pandemic from further complicating the inequities in our education system. President-elect Joe Biden on the new education secretary. His background, solid union guy. He is a member of United University Professors. Now, UUP is the nation's largest higher education union with more than 42,000 academic and professional faculty and retirees. Their members work at 29 New York State-operated campuses, including public teaching hospitals and health science centers in Brooklyn, Long Island, and Syracuse. By the way, they are an affiliate of the American Federation of Teachers, the National Education Association, and the AFL-CIO. All three. Here's a comment from the union. United University Professions welcomes the nomination of Dr. Cardona as U.S. Secretary of Education, given the devastation the coronavirus pandemic has wreaked on the nation's public schools, colleges, and universities. There is not a minute to lose in securing strong leadership in this most important post. Statement goes on to say, as the nation's largest higher education union with a membership that works in the country's largest public higher education system, the State University of New York, we look forward to working with Dr. Cardona as he shapes the Biden administration's focus on higher education. Now, that comes from the union. I also have a comment here from one of our regular guests, Melissa Cropper, who is president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, one of our many sponsors here on the show. And this is what Melissa said. Ohio Federation of Teachers congratulates Miguel Cardona on his nomination to be the next Secretary of Education. His insight and experience as an educator will be invaluable in shaping a Department of Education that can meet the growing needs of our students. Our public schools, which educate 90% of Ohio students, have been struggling due to Betsy DeVos's radical privatization agenda and the irresponsible EdChoice voucher expansion pushed through by her adherents in the Ohio legislature. We know that Cardona will refocus the department on ensuring that public schools are adequately funded, safe, and able to address the social and emotional well-being of our students. It is essential that Congress gives Cardona the resources to support this agenda by including President-elect Biden's priority to triple Title I funding and fully fund the Individuals with Disability Education Act in the federal budget. There's more, and I'm sure Melissa will address that in our next segment with her, which will be in January. That's a comment from Melissa Cropper of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Now a comment from the Republicans, and you knew this was coming, the Republican leader of the Committee on Education and Labor, who just happens to be Representative Virginia Fox out of North Carolina, issued the following statement after she found out that Cardona is going to head the education department. This is what she said. And keep in mind, this is a woman who is hell-bent on destroying unions. She said, our country needs a proven leader at the Department of Education who will put students first. This means supporting policies that better prepare students to compete in our evolving economy, modernize a complicated federal student loan system, and offer all parents equal opportunity to choose the best education for their children. Unfortunately, President-elect Biden's nomination of Miguel Cardona is a step in the wrong direction. Nothing suggests that he will lead the challenge to fight the status quo that currently traps too many kids in failing schools, saddles too many students with crippling debt, and shows too little concern for taxpayers. We need someone who works for the interests of students above all else, and I intend to follow the Senate confirmation proceedings closely as we learn more about Miguel Cardona's competency for the job. Virginia Fox, Republican leader in the Committee on Education and Labor. We'll see what happens on those confirmation hearings. All right. Senator Elizabeth Warren has introduced a bill. This happened on Tuesday, to provide free testing for teachers, students, and other essential workers. The Expanding COVID-19 Testing Capacity Act of 2020 would provide funding and a mandate to the Department of Health and Human Services to stabilize the testing supply chain. Now, this would entail providing money to companies to ramp up manufacturing of tests and testing supplies like pipettes and swabs. The bill guarantees free testing to essential workers at the highest risk of COVID-19, which makes sense, and calls on state and local governments to identify potential testing sites and determine how often workers are, in fact, tested. Now, while testing has expanded around the country since the pandemic began, workers still face difficulties accessing tests and getting the results quickly. That is so important because some of the tests that are out there, you don't get your results until 5 days later. What's the point? Don't you want to know right away, especially if you're infected? So that's one to watch. That's the Expanding COVID-19 Testing Capacity Act of 2020. One more here, and this involves the Amazon workers at Bessemer, Alabama. They're trying to unionize, and they are one step closer to securing a vote, according to the New York Times. Yesterday concluded 3 days of hearings before the National Labor Relations Board, in which Amazon and the union came to an agreement on the critical issue of which types of workers at the facility will be allowed to vote. Now, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union is seeking to represent workers at the fulfillment center. The vote, expected to take place early next year, could cover 5,800 employees, a group that includes both full-time and seasonal workers. The inclusion of seasonal workers means that the union will need to garner more votes to win a majority. Amazon and the union have yet to agree on whether voting will take place by mail or in person. Boy, that's one to watch. No doubt about that. All right. We have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, Bill Samuel of the Labor Federation. He is Government Affairs Director. Lots to talk about. He's coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment on the show brought to you by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency, trying desperately to connect people with employment. 216-666-2185 or ulagency.org. You might want to check with them after the holidays. I'm sure they are experiencing some shortage of staff right now due to the Christmas and the New Year's break coming up, but definitely a great organization. Let's go to line number one right now. Welcome one of our regulars, and this guy, I don't know how he handles his job, because as soon as he gets legislation, all of a sudden things change, and perfect example of that is what happened this week with the stimulus bill. We had the House vote on it. We had the Senate vote on it. Seems like it was moving forward. The Treasury Secretary said the checks are going to start happening next week, and we were talking about $600 checks for everybody. $1,200 for a couple. Then comes Donald Trump and says, hey, that's not enough. And then he disappears. Hey, Bill Samuel, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, it's really hard to predict from hour to hour what's going to happen as long as Donald Trump is president. It does make for an interesting job, but yeah, it's a little bit unsettling, to say the least.
So I'm looking at the legislation here. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm reading it's over
5,500 pages, yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot. And I always ask the question, gee, I wonder who read this.
Yeah.
And we're hearing the crazy thing about this. We often hear the good things at first, you know, help for the unemployed. And I guess the assistance for the airline workers, was that part of this too?
That was. There's money for transit, airlines, yeah. Inner city buses, Amtrak, highways. Yeah, there's money spread out to keep a lot of folks on payrolls, you know, whether or not they can actually get to their jobs or not. But there's a lot of stuff that smells, which I guess you're about to point out some of those things once you read through it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We call it pork. And yeah. That's been going on. I don't know for the life of me why they can't pass a clean bill. Yeah, I mean, we got 20 million people that are unemployed. Evictions for, I mean, I could go on and on and on. You and I had this conversation ever since the Heroes Act was passed back in May 15th, and McConnell has been sitting on this here at the last minute when everything's going to run out, when desperation is peaking. This is when they decide to come together, and then they still don't have anything. But I'm hearing there's little things in there for people involved in horse racing, obviously, right. Like tax breaks. I'm like, why do they do right. That kind of stuff, Bill?
And NASCAR, liquor manufacturing, you know, all of this stuff, I suppose, one way to look at it is, it all keeps some people employed. There are people, who get paid at racetracks and distilleries and NASCAR, pit crews and drivers. So, there's the money gets spread around. It makes, it gets votes for the bill. Because, if you're a member from Kentucky, for example, probably distilleries are a big employer in your state, and they're politically powerful.
Right.
I'm not making excuses for it, but that's the explanation. This is, in the old days they called it feather bedding, there's different ways to get to a majority in Congress, and one way is to pay off a lot of individual members. Pay off is sort of a pejorative way to put it, or give them what they need to go back home and say they did something for their communities. So, it's worth doing if you get something big out of it. You know, the rest of the stimulus, the rescue package is pretty important stuff. So, I think it's worth swallowing that probably.
So, Bill, in your opinion,
yeah.
what's next here?
I don't know. This, as you said in the intro, this whole thing was negotiated with everybody in the room. The four leaders, House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, representing the administration, I think he was on the phone. They worked through this. They shook hands, and then they passed it. And in any other administration at any other time in our history, that would be good enough to, you know, assume that the next stage is a presidential signature. And then it, you know, becomes law. This president had a fit about unrelated matters, I guess. Republicans suggesting that he might not serve a second term. Imagine that. And then he turned on the whole thing. You know, anybody who was in the room is now suspect to him. And I think that.
Uh-huh.
And then he flew off to Mar-a-Lago in a huff. So as you said, you've got 20 plus million people unemployed, about 12 million who will lose. Whose last checks will arrive right after Christmas, and then more on December 31st will end, and all kinds of other important, you know, CARES Act provisions, the eviction moratorium, forbearance on student loans, you know, all kinds of funding streams which are barely keeping the economy afloat. I mean, we're in desperate shape right now. And he's sort of thrown it all up in the air, and I guess he's daring folks to not come back and do what he wants. Now, we're all for $2,000 checks. I mean, I think that's, you know, by the way, I don't know if you pointed this out, the HEROES Act, Democrats passed twice, actually had $2,000 checks per adult. And the Republicans said no. Mitch McConnell, the White House, there's no way the Republicans were going to vote for $2,000 per individual. And now their leader, you know, Donald Trump is saying he won't sign it unless they increase the amount to 2,000. So who knows what's going to happen next? It's very hard.
Oh, okay. The Republicans' leader is Donald Trump. What about the real leader here, Mitch McConnell?
Well, Mitch McConnell, leader in quotes, he decides. You know, I don't know whether he's a leader or not. He decides. You know, the way the Senate operates is the Senate majority leader, and it can be a majority of one, 51 to 49, decides everything. What gets scheduled, who gets recognized, what gets a vote, how many votes it takes to pass, was it 60 or is it 51, you know, a supermajority or just a... So that he's really the all-powerful, which is really a shame because this particular leader, Mitch McConnell, cares only about one thing, and that's holding on to power. You know, for a long time, he said, let the states go bankrupt. You know, basically, let people starve. We don't, you know, this is not Washington's problem. So, you know, it's really going to be his call now. I think the only, you know, ray of hope is I think there's, you know, distance now between him and Trump. And so he may actually do something that is good for the country and not necessarily what Donald Trump has ordered him to do. So we'll see.
So let me get this straight. He hasn't said yes. He has not said no. And we're talking about Mitch McConnell here.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't said anything. He hasn't said anything. Yeah. I mean, by the way, as I understand it, I haven't seen this. Kevin McCarthy, who really is the sycophant to beat all sycophants of Donald Trump, apparently wrote a letter endorsing Trump's threat. So he also opposed $2,000. He probably didn't even want the $600 checks to go, knowing where he is in his party. Now, because Trump snapped his fingers, he said, yep, I'm for $200. This deal is not... But McConnell hasn't said anything yet. I think he's probably a little irritated right now and trying to figure out what the next move is. Meanwhile, the country is you know, kind of on the edge of a cliff here, our economy and individual families who are really counting on this relief. And it was promised to them, you know.
Yeah. You know what's really sad about this? This was only the 29th piece of legislation, bill number 29, that made it through both houses of Congress this year in the middle of a pandemic. You would think,
is that right? Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that statistic. I'm sure that's a record.
I got that from David Dayan. I don't know if you know David.
Editor.
He's the editor of the American Prospect. He also pointed out that Trump said, you know, when they were going to increase it to $2,000, that it would cost $3.8 billion. Well, he did his math wrong on that. It's $380 billion.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't make sense. Yeah, the last bill that was passed to deal with the both health and economic crisis created by this virus was in, I believe it was the CARES Act, of course, and I think it was the end of March.
Yeah.
So we've been struggling along, and the House and Senate have been, and by the way, I really don't think it's equivalent, you know, to say Democrats and Republicans are all at fault. I don't think that's right. The Democrats have tried to pass bills. The House, in fact, has passed several bills, the HEROES Act, twice in two different versions to try to get the Republicans to come along, and they wouldn't do it. So you're right, the Congress has done virtually nothing, but when we say Congress, we really need to be more specific. It's Republican leadership that has blocked action for all these months.
Now, you talked about state and local governments. I know McConnell was dead set against that. So there's no money for state and local
governments? No money.
In
fact, the Democrats tried a couple different ways. Well, they suggest, well, why don't we put money into FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration? We've got an emergency here. There are states that are unable to collect trash and pay their, you know, ambulance drivers, and they've laid off over a million state and local municipal workers. These are public services necessary in a pandemic. So Democrats said, if you don't want to just give grants to state and local governments because they can't run deficits, they can't raise taxes because there aren't enough people working, there aren't enough businesses open to pay taxes. So the Democrats said, well, let's try another way. Let's give it to FEMA and let them give it out in the form of emergency disaster grants. And McConnell said no to that also. He does not want any money going to states, which somehow he thinks are all Democratic, which, of course, is crazy. Kentucky has a Democratic governor, but there are plenty of states with Republican governors and Republican mayors who are desperately in need of this money and have asked for it, and he's saying no to them as well as the big blue states, New York, California.
Illinois. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know how he gets away with it, frankly, but he seems to. His voters, you know, just returned him for another 6 years and with a pretty healthy margin. So
I know. It's really sad. Well, and we should point out, too, state governments have to balance their budgets. The federal government does not have to do that.
Right. And you can, you know, they run on revenue. You know, personal taxes, property taxes, and business taxes, and all are way down during the pandemic. So they're all running deficits. They can't run deficits year to year. During the year, they start running a deficit. Then they have to make up for it the following year. And the only way they can do that is by laying off people and cutting expenditures. So there are some, you know, rays of light here. There's money for transit agencies. Those are municipal functions. There's money for health care. So public hospitals will get some money. There's money for education, $82 billion for schools, K through 12. I think it's about $54 billion. So, it's not all bad for public sector employers. But overall, the states are going to be running way short at the end of the year and into next year, and then they're going to have to lay off more people. As I said, over a million municipal workers have already been laid off state.
Yeah. And more to come. All right, Bill, I got to take a break. Bill Samuel, who is the Director of Government Affairs for the Labor Federation, AFL-CIO.org is their website. Also, Bill is going to talk about Biden's cabinet and reflect on a great labor leader, Larry Willis, passing away at the age of 53 last month. All part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at oft-aft.org. And as I indicated at the top of the show, they are really, really happy with Biden's selection for the next education secretary. I'm sure our guest, Bill Samuel, will have some comments on that. Before we get into the cabinet, though, Bill, I want to talk one more piece about the COVID relief bill, liability protections. Now, I guess McConnell wanted that really bad, protecting, I guess, his corporate people for like 5 years out. If you get COVID-19, you can't sue your place of work, but that's out of the bill. Is that correct?
Right. This was one of the more outrageous demands, and something that he actually lost on. He doesn't lose very often, but he lost on this. Right. He wanted very broad liability against lawsuits, or protection against lawsuits, that not only individual lawsuits, so if you feel that you were exposed because of negligence by your employer, or if you're a consumer and you were exposed through your employer's negligence, you couldn't sue. He also, this proposal that McConnell advanced also would have tied the hands of federal agencies. They couldn't enforce standards and guidelines that they imposed on employers, corporations, you know, large and small, to keep the public and their workers safe. We all know about the meatpacking situation where, you know, hundreds, thousands of workers were exposed. Many died and were kept working and close together, you know, and without the kind of protections that were really common sense. Not only could they not sue, but OSHA, the agency responsible for protecting these people, couldn't bring an enforcement action against these companies under McConnell's plan. He wanted it basically a get out of jail free card for any employer of any size for basically any behavior that affected the health and safety of their workers or consumers. And on this one, Democrats pushed back, and so did we. The labor movement pushed very hard back on this. Now, one of the things McConnell said, going back to the earlier segment, was, if I don't get liability protection, you don't get state and local aid. He tied them together. And so that was a tough call. Now, whether or not he was serious about that, I don't know. But when we killed the liability provision, he dug in on state and local aid, and so we got neither. And you know, we'll live to fight another day on state and local. The president-elect has said it's a top priority when he comes in January. So we'll hopefully get some of that passed early next year.
Can't come soon enough, January 20th. Wow. All right. Let's talk about Biden's cabinet picks. And yesterday, as you know, he selected his new education secretary, which was a 180 compared to Betsy DeVos. Wow. Any thoughts on? Let's start there, and all the other ones so far.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty pleased. You know, he's got a cabinet that really does look like America, with lots of, diversity and real life experiences. This, you know, Cardona, the education nominee, was a public school teacher for many years, and he grew up, you know, in a public housing project, and because of, you know, having gone to public school, he has had a very successful career in education. That's the kind of person you want as education secretary, not Betsy DeVos, who grew up very wealthy, you know, basically went to private schools, only believes in private schools. Talk about public schools as government schools. This is, you know, sort of Republican speak now, government schools, as if that's a bad thing. The Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm, former governor of Michigan, pro-labor governor when she was in office. The cabinet, by and large, is diverse and progressive. I don't think we could do much better. We don't have a labor secretary yet. He seems to be holding out till the end to make that decision. We're anxiously waiting for that decision to be made. But as President Trump said the other day, we're going to get behind whoever it is, because all the names we've seen would be terrific and, you know, head and shoulders above, Jean Scalia, the current labor secretary, and all that came before him in Republican administration. So it's a good cabinet, and we think they're going to serve the country really well starting January 20th.
Regarding the labor secretary, the last I heard was the, who's in charge of the Labor Department over in California, Julie Sue.
Yep, she's one of the names mentioned. Mayor Marty Walsh from Boston Julie Sue is a great administrator in California, tough on enforcement of health and safety and wage and hour and, you know, protecting workers in California. She's done a great job. Andy Levin, a congressman from Michigan, used to work at the AFL-CIO before he joined the 116th Congress. He'd be fabulous. So there are a lot of good names out there, and I think any one of them would be effective and do a great job. So we're just waiting to hear who it is.
Well, I got to hand it off to Joe Biden on the pick so far, because he's a union guy. He makes no bones about it.
He says it every time. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. This education secretary, Miguel Cardona, has a strong labor background. He is with the United University Professions, which is affiliated. This is interesting. They're affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers, the NEA, National Education Association, and the AFL-CIO. So it's good to have that labor voice in there, because 90% of the schools in America are public schools, 90 right. plus, actually. And here you got Betsy DeVos, you know, lobbying for the other 10%, if that.
Right. And by the way, I'll just be quick here. There are a lot of picks beneath the cabinet we've been hearing about who are very strong, progressive allies of the labor movement. You know, in key White House jobs, Office of Management and Budget, National Economic Council, these are all people who make day-to-day decisions beneath the cabinet. And some of them come from Elizabeth Warren's office and very, you know, liberal backgrounds, think tanks, organized labor, some folks. So it's going to be a night and day between the Trump administration and the Biden administration. I think the challenge will be, can we get things through Congress? And we'll talk a lot about that next year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny you bring that up, because I was reading a statement from our dear friend Virginia Fox out of North Carolina, who hates unions. And she issued a statement yesterday about Cardona, saying, "Nothing suggests he will lead the challenge to fight the status quo that currently traps too many kids in failing schools, saddles too many students with crippling debt, and shows too little concern for taxpayers. We need someone who works for the interests of students above all else."
Well, it's interesting. Just that statement alone. Well, you know, they've been in charge for 4 years.
Right, right.
It doesn't sound like they've made much progress.
No, not at all. You touched on the confirmation process, and I guess that all depends on Georgia, right? Who's gonna be in charge of the Senate here?
Yeah, if the best we can do is a 50-50 split where the tie is broken by the Democratic vice president, and so essentially that means Democrats would have a slim majority on every vote and then could organize the Senate. So the majority leader would not be Mitch McConnell, it would be Chuck Schumer from New York. So it all comes down to Georgia, and you know, it won't be easy even with 50, but it'll be a lot easier with 48. And you know, that's 2 weeks away, less than 2 weeks away, that election.
Yeah, January 5th.
Yeah.
And then on January 6th, we're hearing a couple of Republicans are going to try to disrupt the Electoral College vote.
The counting of the Electoral College, right. There's already one House member who's promised to do it. They haven't yet confirmed a senator to do that. By the way, it doesn't really amount to anything. Both chambers would have to vote to reject the electors, and the House will not do that. The Democrats control the House. So if only the Senate did it, even if they had 51 votes, it wouldn't matter. The electors would be seated, or whatever the term is, they'd be counted. And so Biden is going to be president on January 20th, no matter what Trump does or says.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one more thing I want to talk to you about, and I saw this recently about the USMCA, the new NAFTA, that Mexico was falling behind on labor enforcement. Do you know anything about that right now, Bill?
Yeah, there's a labor expert panel, which and we serve on, along with other experts in academia and international relations world. There's a panel of experts, and they've been surveying the situation with regard to the enforcement of Mexico's new labor statutes. They are falling behind. Not surprising. I mean, we didn't think this was going to be a smooth liftoff, even though we agreed to the renegotiated deal. It's going to take time, though, and it's going to take pressure from the U.S. government and some support from the U.S. government. And again, I think Biden is probably, you know, more capable of providing that kind of leadership from here than Donald Trump has demonstrated so far. So we hope Mexico will speed up the process of changing its laws and enforcing their laws and putting money behind it so the workers can organize in Mexico and form unions and not undercut U.S. jobs. That's the whole point of this deal. It's to free up Mexico's labor force so they can become a little bit more like our middle class, you know, labor force here. It's going to take time. So that they compete on a level playing field. Because if they do, I think we'll be in much better shape. That's the plan, anyway.
All right, Bill. All right, we'll touch on that, I'm sure, in the new year. You know, in the next segment, I told you this off the air, we're going to play the last show with Larry Willis. Larry was the president of the Transportation Trades Department of Labor Federation, often a guest here on America's Workforce. Almost every month we had someone from the department, and it was usually Larry. Any reflection on his impact in the labor movement, Bill?
Well, Larry was a really dear friend of mine, and we worked very closely together for many years. He was the consummate leader of his unions, and particularly in transportation. He knew more than anybody else, no ego involved. He was a team player who only thought about what was going to be good for transit workers, aviation workers, highway workers, bus drivers. That was his life. He knew the law better than anybody. He was exactly what we needed in that job, and we're going to miss him terribly. But I'm going to miss him on a personal level because, as I said, we were good friends. But we've all had memorials for him, it's sad. He died very young in a tragic bike accident, and I didn't know he was such an outdoors person, but that's apparently he spent a lot of time riding his bike, and it was very sad what happened. Hopefully the department will, you know, manage a succession, and they'll carry on, but he will be sorely missed.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Greg Regan. Greg is the Secretary Treasurer. I assume he'll probably take over that position. He'll be on the show on Monday. Well, I'm going to let you go. You take care. Okay. The best of the holiday season. And next time we talk, I think Biden will be sworn in then. So
that's right. It'll be probably a couple of days after the swearing in.
There you go. Thanks, take care, my friend. And
help look up.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Bill Samuel on our live line. Quick break in that last segment with Larry Willis coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at AWF Union Podcast. Well, as I indicated at the top of the show, Larry Willis, our last segment with him was October 28th. And for the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking, I want to play that. I listened to it. And I think this was an appropriate time right now. It's Christmas Eve. And I'll tell you, this is a guy that's sorely missed in the labor movement, head of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. And again, if you listen closely to this, you will hear his sense of optimism. You have to understand, the election was just days away. Let's listen to Larry Willis, his last show on America's Workforce. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars, Larry Willis. Larry is president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. TTD.org is a website. And as you heard at the top of the show, the TTD is leading the call for the federal government to protect frontline workers. Makes sense. And what they want to do is enforce a face mask mandate for public transportation. Think about how many people use public transportation. Let's get masks on them, protect the public, protect the workers on the trains, the subways. Larry Willis. That makes sense, doesn't it? But we don't live in a very sensible world right now, do we?
I'm not sure what world we're living in, but it's not a sensible one. You are correct, because in any other world, that would be a no-brainer. And apparently it's not.
What's the problem here? Well, I read over the weekend that Mark Meadows, the chief of staff for Trump, uh-huh. said they're giving up on the virus. It's that we can't control the virus. All
right.
we can do is work for a
just
vaccine.
Roll over.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just take a powder and move on. Look, the problem is the lack of common sense leadership in the White House and with this administration. You know, as you've noted, really since the beginning of COVID, TTD and our unions, individually, collectively, we've been asking the Department of Transportation and what's called the modal agencies, Federal Transit, Federal Railroad specifically, to better protect passengers and workers, obviously, in transportation. You know, the labor movement talks a lot about OSHA, and we're very involved in that fight as well and engaged in that. But, you know, for many of our workers, their safety protections come from the Department of Transportation. So in addition to pushing for an emergency temporary standard for OSHA, we've been asking the Department of Transportation to protect our members and the passengers that we serve. As part of that, back in July, we asked for something that we thought was pretty straightforward. We simply said that the Department of Transportation should mandate the use of masks in transportation modes. By the way, not just, you know, transit and bus, but also passenger rail, airports, airplanes, ferries, really anywhere that passengers and workers interact with each other. And, you know, none of our previous requests have been accepted. So we weren't that shocked when they denied it. But the really funny one about this is that they happened to deny this on the very same day that the president, revealed that he was, you know, tested positive for COVID and went in for world-class health care, at Walter Reed. And, you know, didn't see any irony in the fact that, you know, he was denying basic protections for workers and passengers, but he's going to get ushered around in his private, you know, limos and helicopters and get the world-class health care that he needs while denying protections for everyone else. So it was real irony, but, you know, it really does show you the problems that we have with the current leadership in terms of protecting us from this global pandemic.
Now, when it comes to protection, is this something they want to throw on the states or say it's not the role of the federal government? Because we've seen this many times over the years with this administration. Is that what they're trying to do here?
Yeah, that's precisely what they're saying, which is, you know, we're going to defer to the states, that we're going to defer to individual, you know, transit providers or airports. Here's the problem with that. I don't know if anyone noticed, but we are in a global public health crisis. It requires, you know, at a minimum, a national response. We are an interconnected country. We are an interconnected transportation system. We need basic standards out there. And again, and we know from talking to our unions and what they're hearing from their members, while there are some agencies, you know, transit agencies, for example, that are doing the right thing, there's a lot that still aren't doing this in the right way. They're not, you know, providing the right type of PPE to their workers. They're not providing the certainty and the protections for passengers. And a national, you know, requirement that everyone wears masks when they're in, you know, public transit, bus terminals, Amtrak, airports, you know, aircraft would provide that certainty. The other reality, and we've seen this a lot, is that, you know, having mask guidance out there and state differences, I mean, that's all well and good. But when you ask our members to enforce even local mask requirements, there's been some very, you know, bad confrontations. We've had, assaults
and things that have really gone in the wrong way. A federal mandate would back up those workers. You know, we talk about essential employees and the importance that these frontline workers are playing. Let's give them the tools. Let's give them the real authority to tell passengers, look, we're all in this together. You know, this is happening across the country. Everyone needs to wear masks when they enter, you know, our transportation network.
I don't get it with the mask. I really don't. I mean, the mask is to protect somebody else. I mean, that's the reason you wear the mask. It's not necessarily for you. It's to protect other people. And we have such a confrontation over that. Joe Biden, if he was running things, things would be a whole lot different. Can you kind of spell out how things would be different with Biden in charge?
Well, look, just on this issue, you know, he has been very clear. You know, he called the Department of Transportation decision a stupid one, misguided. He made a point recently that wearing a mask, whether, you know, when you're around people, is part of our patriotic duty. And I couldn't agree with him more. He's laid out a very specific 4-point plan when it comes to COVID. About steps that he would take, obviously, not just in transportation, but beyond. And, you know, what we also know about Joe Biden is that he knows how to run a government, quite frankly. You know, he was obviously vice president for 8 years, a senator long before that. He really understands how to marshal the resources of the federal sector, bring in the private sector, lead by example, listen to the experts, to the scientists in this case. So I think the difference in combating COVID, both in the transportation space and beyond, you know, Joe Biden really presents, you know, both a different agenda and actually getting things done in that space that we know will save lives and right an economy right now that is hemorrhaging jobs like we have never seen here, quite frankly. So really huge difference just in the COVID space.
Speaking with Larry Willis, who heads the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. Larry, I have to ask you, Trump still has incredible support in this country, even among union brothers and sisters.
Yep.
Are you surprised by that? What's your take on that?
You know, we've been saying this, you know, for 4+ years, even when he was running in the primary, that, you know, he comes out there. Look, he knows how to sell. He's a used car salesman, right? He knows how to brand and sell a product. I don't think he's good at much anything else. But, you know, he has sort of figured out, you know, at least when he was running, how to resonate with a lot of our members, you know, promising them big talk on trade, making America great again. But, you know, again, I think you need only look at 4 years to see how hollow that rhetoric is. He doesn't care about middle class America. You know, he has been as hostile as any president on collective bargaining, right? And we know that, you know, that is the ticket to a good middle class job, to give, you know, to create more opportunities for workers to freely choose union, to have higher union density. We know the higher wages, better benefits, safer working conditions. And he has stood in the way. Not just in the way, been as hostile as any president that I've seen. You know, you and I talked earlier about Ronald Reagan. He's got nothing on him, you know. So, I think he's done a lot of negative things here. And I think in 4 years, workers are realizing that. And I think, you know, unions, you know, including those in the transportation space, have been doing a lot of work. We're not done, but we've done a lot of work over the last, you know, several months and in the remaining days here to remind people of the negative record that he has, and that, you know, he is not for frontline workers in this country. He really is for making him and his friends, you know, richer, help hold more of the levers of power. And we're going to make that case. And I think you're going to see a better election outcome because of that.
Good. Yeah, voters have to know the issues. And I know the Labor Federation and Transportation Trades Department is doing a great job of informing the voters on those issues. Good stuff, Larry. You take care. Next time we talk, maybe we'll have some good news to talk about, okay?
I'm booking it in my calendar, a good news conversation. Absolutely.
You can hear his sense of optimism. Again, that was recorded October 26, just a week before the general election. Looking forward to a new administration, I'm sure. Larry Willis, rest in peace. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, working class perspectives and the United Steelworkers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.